Well, I've been preaching the last several weeks, but this Sunday is the week that I always preach. This Sunday of the year is the week that I always preach because we get to kind of focus on and encourage our seniors and our other leaders in the youth group. And this is the week we do this. And in the past, we have focused on just our seniors, but we haven't done that the last few years because we recognize that as seniors graduate, that not just seniors, but juniors and sophomores and freshmen and even middle schoolers fill those roles. And so this is really an encouragement to anyone in the youth group that is stepping up and going to be filling those roles. But we also recognize that this can be relevant to the rest of our church. And I hope that what we speak on today impacts you as well and challenges you as well. But I also want to tell you that Kent Smith is going to be leading a discussion in here after worship for class on church leadership. And so if there's questions you have or if you're just interested in church leadership and how it works at Southside, I encourage you to come to Kent's class following worship here in the auditorium. The last several years that I've spoken on leadership and what it means to be a leader, I've spoken on service and humility. And those have been the themes that I've spoken on, that as transformed people, our leadership looks different than people that don't know Jesus. And Jesus says this. He says, you have seen that people lord their authority over others, but not so with you. You're to serve. The first will be last, and the last will be first. That's what I've spoken on the last few years, but I'm not going to do that this year. I want to speak this year on bold leadership, leading boldly. And we're going to be in Daniel chapter 6, and we're going to read a good bit from there. And so if you want to go ahead and be turning there, it's the story of Daniel and the lion's den. And that's a children's story, right? Like, we teach that in our children's classes. In fact, I was talking to Lauren about this sermon, and we were talking about Daniel and the lion's den. And Will was like, Dad, what are you talking about? And I said, and we're talking about Daniel and the lion's den. On Sunday, I'm going to preach on that. And he said, my Daniel and the lion's den? Like, he laid claim to that. Like, children have claimed that story. And you know what? It's actually kind of true. We talk about those stories. And then sometimes we don't hear those stories for a long time as adults. We can go a long time without hearing these stories and talking about them. But there's just a whole lot of depth to those stories, including Daniel the lion's den. There's a whole lot of truth in there for children, but also for adults. And so we're going to be in Daniel chapter 6 this morning. But I want to start, before we get there, I want to start talking about stories. And we've mentioned this book before, but a guy named Donald Miller wrote a book called A Million Miles in a Thousand Years. And in it, he talks about the elements that make up a good story. He says there has to be a passionate character that is pursuing a worthy goal, a goal that is actually worthy of life and action. And along the way, this character should encounter conflict, significant and genuine conflict that he has to overcome in order to get to his worthy goal. And that these are the elements that make up a good story. And he says that in the films that you watch and the books that you love, these elements are in those good books and in those good movies. But they're not just what makes up a good book or a good movie. That the same elements that make up a good story are the elements that make up a good life. That we are to be passionate people in pursuit of worthy goals that require us to overcome conflict. Let me give you an example. What if I told you I had a book for you to read, and the premise of this book was a guy has a regular job and he's saving up money to buy a new to him but used Toyota Camry. You would be like, I don't want to read that book. Take this book back. I don't have time for that, right? And we wouldn't want to read. That's not a compelling story. And yet, I find myself living that story too often. But instead, we should have lofty goals, big dreams to follow. One way that I evaluate stories, usually after I read a book or see a film, if I want to, I reflect, I love to read, so I reflect a lot on what I read. And so one thing I do is I think about where the story started and then where it ended. And I imagine that if that's all I knew, where the story started and where it ended, if I would be at all interested in the middle and how we got there. Let me give you an example of that. Here's the beginning of a story, a true story. In 1987, there was a pilot who took off in a passenger plane with his co-pilot and no passengers from a town in Maine, and he was headed to Boston because the plane was needed in Boston. That's the beginning of a story. The end of the story is this. The co-pilot, after making an emergency landing, was shocked to find the pilot hanging on to an open external door. That's the end of the story. It's incredible. What? That is a huge difference from the beginning to the end. I want to know what happened in the middle. Like, how did this guy, this pilot, come to hang on to the outside external door and the co-pilot to be surprised by that? That would be a good story. And so that you're not all thinking about what happened in the middle, I will tell you how that story happened. They were flying. The pilot heard a knocking. He goes to the back. He finds that a door is kind of loose. He tries to fix it, but it opens and it sucks him out. He happens to grab onto two bars that are attached to the door. The co-pilot, because there's no passengers back there, doesn't know what happened, and he knows the door's open. He's assumed that the pilot has plummeted to a death. And so he makes emergency landing and finds that for 10 minutes he had been flying for, 200 miles an hour or whatever. He started out at 5,000 feet, and this pilot had held on, hanging as they fly for 10 minutes. And the funniest part of this story is it took 3 minutes for them to pry his hands off the metal bars that he was holding on to. Right? But that's a good story. Daniel chapter 6 is this way. And we're going to do that. I'm going to tell you the beginning of this story. And then I'm going to tell you the end of the story. And then we'll decide if we want to know what happens in the middle. If you'll look at maybe Daniel chapter 6, we're going to read the beginning of the story together, starting in verse 1. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule through the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of governmental affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God." Now, I'm going to stop there and just say, what a great testament to Daniel. That these men pry into his life and they say, look, we can't find anything corrupt about him. And if we're going to create some situation where he's going to be corrupt, it's going to have to do with his God. Like, isn't that a great testament? He's not corrupt, but he'll break the law if it's for his God. It's a great testament to the character of Daniel. So let's move on. So it's verse 6. So the administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king and said, "O King Darius, live forever." The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, O king, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered, in accordance with the laws, the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed. So King Darius put the decree in writing. This story starts with a decree. Let me give you a little bit of background. Daniel is an Israelite in exile in Babylon. And so as we read in the text, he found favor with Darius, and Darius makes him one of his government officials. And then he so distinguishes himself amongst the government officials that Darius is close to making Daniel, close to putting him in charge of everything, of being the top guy, right? He's going to give him the authority over everything in Babylon. Daniel has found the trust of Darius, and this has made the other government officials jealous. So they come up with this plan. Let's say that Daniel can't pray to his God, Yahweh God, our God. He can't pray to him. And they know that Daniel's going to break this rule. So they get Darius to issue this decree. Now, this decree, though it's to say any God or any man, it's really directed at one person and at one God. This decree is directed at Daniel alone. Now, I have felt this way before. In high school, my senior year, I started wearing moccasins to school. And I wore them with everything, okay? Jeans, khaki pants, shorts, athletic shorts. I mean, I would wear moccasins with anything. They were comfortable, and I liked them. And you might be surprised to find that I was the only one in the school that wore moccasins to school. And a few weeks after our senior year started, our administrators amended the dress code and said, you are not allowed to wear moccasins to school. They told everyone that. I was the only one wearing moccasins, so I felt attacked. And though I recognize that my right to wear moccasins is probably not on level with the right to pray to our God, and though I didn't test it, I doubt that the punishment would have been as harsh as what Darius has promised the breaker of his law. I still felt like I was singled out, right? This is the story. This is what's happened. This decree is about one person. It's about Daniel. Okay, that's the beginning of the story. A decree is issued. No one can pray to Yahweh. Daniel can't pray to Yahweh God. Let's think about it that way. He's issued a decree that Daniel can't pray. Go. Okay. All right. Let's get to the end of the story. That's the beginning of the story. Here's the end. Starting in verse, we're gonna just go to the end of Daniel 6. This is the verse that we read this morning. Starting in verse 25. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language throughout the land, "May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel, for he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth." This story ends with another decree. It begins with a decree that Daniel's not allowed to pray to his God. It ends with a decree that Daniel's God is the living God, that he rescues and he saves, and this decree goes out to every nation, to people of all languages. Like, that's the end of this story. Look at the change. Decree one, you can't pray to this God. Decree two, everyone, this God is the living God. He rescues and he saves. I got to know what happened in the middle. I got to know what changed the decrees so drastically. Like, who could imagine that that's the way this story ends? Christians might. People that follow this God might. People that know that Joseph was sold to some traveling foreigners and he ends up having authority over the most powerful nation in the world. People that know that sometimes shepherds become kings. Sometimes barren women give birth. Sometimes donkeys talk. And sometimes prostitutes are written about hundreds of years later as examples of faith. And that sometimes doctors go to Africa to help sick Liberians and instead become a voice of sacrificial love to millions around the world. People that follow our God might imagine that a story could end this way. I think that our youth group and the church need leaders with bold imaginations. I think that we need leaders who are asking the question, what if? Who can see where we are now, but can look at the future and say, if we believe that God is in charge, and that God is faithful, and that God is active in the world, what could be? And for our youth group, We've been talking recently in our youth group. Did you know that in the last 4 years, we have graduated 44 seniors? In the last 4 years, we've graduated 44 seniors. And in the same amount of time, including this sixth grade class that we're getting this year, we will have inducted 17. Okay, so that's almost a 30-person difference between those. And it's just a natural thing. There are smaller classes. We have some huge classes in our youngest age groups. Y'all just didn't have a lot of babies 12 years ago. That's what happened. But we've had these smaller grades. And so we've been talking about in the youth group, what's the opportunity there? Like, what is it that God might be doing? What could God do if our youth group happened to be a little bit smaller than it was 4 years ago? And so we've been talking about that and praying about that and really reflecting on that. And I don't know of a group any size, anywhere, including our youth group, including this church, where there isn't at least one person that doesn't feel isolated and disconnected. That absolutely includes our youth group, and it absolutely includes our church. But what if we become the group where no one feels isolated? What if we become the group where no one is disconnected? And we may think, I don't know, there's not any group like that. We need bold imaginations. We need to think about what God could. You don't think God could get behind that and say, yeah, I'll work for that with you? What about our church? Our church could be that church, right, where no one feels isolated. Well, if we look around and see, like, is there anybody that's just kind of withdrawing that we could reach out to, where no one feels disconnected? That's just one idea. What if we got together and we just started dreaming big in the name of God, saying God is active in the world? What if? What could be? We need leaders with bold imaginations. And don't we? We've seen some of that in our church, right? We've seen, like, things that come up. We've seen, of course, like the pantry. Someone imagined that. What if we could be a church that fed hundreds and hundreds of families? Bobby Steed, he had the dream of, like, what if we could be the church that tutors tons of kids in our community? And now there's 60-plus kids that are coming to our building during the school year getting tutored. We see that, but we need more of it. We need leaders with bold imaginations. In the meantime, though, we're in this middle part. We have a beginning. We're headed somewhere. Hopefully it's in a bold place. And in the meantime, we're in the middle. And I want to know how Daniel was able to move the story from a decree that was kind of against God to a decree that very much proclaimed God's name. So let's go back to the story. We're going to read verse 10. Now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. And 3 times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Daniel goes right back, doing what he had always done, praying to his God. In the face of persecution, in the face of violent death, Daniel is faithful to his God. In the meantime, we have dreams, we have bold imaginations, but in the meantime, we act with bold faith. We need leaders that don't just have bold imaginations, but the willingness to live out their faith boldly. And here's what happens to Daniel. They're spying on him. The government officials are spying on him. They catch him praying, and they go to the king, and they say, Daniel was praying. You got to kill him. It's the law. And this distresses Darius, because remember, he likes Daniel. He tries to find a loophole, a way out. He tries all night. He can't find it. And so that evening, Daniel was put in the lion's den. And Darius was distressed all night. But he got up the next morning and he went to the den and he yelled in, Daniel, are you there? Did your God say, he's like asking, is your God who you said he was? Did he save you? And Daniel, of course, was fine. He said, an angel was in here all night with me, closing the mouths of these lions Daniel acted faithfully, boldly, and then God steps in and acts. And I doubt that Daniel knew that's where the story was headed, that another decree was going to be issued. But he acted boldly, and then God steps. Here's the thing about all this, is that when we try to be very cautious and careful and in control of the area, like, here's my little circle of dreams, I'm going to take small steps because I know that they will succeed. I know that I can do this. Where is the space for God to move in and act? You've already controlled it all, right? Like, if I make this little circle of, like, this is where I'm going to work and this is what I'm going to do, there's no space really for God to get in here and act because I'm in control. But if we can have bold imaginations, if we can make goals that take us into uncharted waters where we are completely out of control, then we create the space for God to step in and do something more amazing than even our bold imaginations can ever come up with. Isn't that what happened with Kent? Kent took bold steps. Kent and Amber took bold steps to go to Liberia and to work there and to help sick people. And they created the space for God to act. And look at where their story is now. They had no idea that's where their story was headed. But they serve a God of the unexpected, a God of big dreams that make dreams even bigger beyond what we can ever imagine. There's a song by Hillsong called Oceans, and it starts like this. It says, "Lead me." The theme of this verse is, it says, "Lead me, God, into uncharted waters where my feet may fail." It gives you this picture of someone who is walking into deep water, deeper than they can swim in, deeper than they can survive in, but there's trust in God. That's what we need. We need leaders who are willing to dream of places that we have to rely on God, to dream of ministries in which we can absolutely have to rely on God to work because we can't do it on our own. And when that happens, God steps in and he acts and he weaves together a story that is absolutely compelling to the world. And we can be good witnesses because we're living out good stories in the name of God. And I want to show you an example of this. And this will be encouraging to everyone, but I especially want our teenagers to watch this because the girl that this story is about, she's 18 when the story starts. She's 18, normal 18-year-old. She's 21 when this video is being shot. And so we're going to watch this as an example.
I want to ask you to come with me on a journey. A journey that started 3 years ago when I thought I knew what my life would look like. And I had no idea. A journey that has shown me more about the Father's heart and his extravagant compassion than I could have ever imagined. A journey that requires me to give more of myself every single day. It's a journey that took me from a 10-month commitment to teach kindergarten in Uganda to a lifetime commitment of bettering and serving this country. I'm Katie Davis. I'm 21 years old, and I live here in Uganda. I run Amazima Ministries, and my full-time occupation is that I'm a mom to 14 little girls. I graduate high school having made a commitment to teach at a preschool for a year in the middle of nowhere, Uganda. My parents were so not on board, but, you know, it came to a point where it was like, okay, God said, you choose me, or you choose to please your dad, and what's it going to be? And I said, all right, I'm going back. It is January, and I'm looking at a little girl crushed under a brick wall with no one to take care of her and her siblings. I offer to take them home with me until we find a better solution. I'm not really sure what to do with them, but I know that they are God's children. They stay. It is 3 days later, and the littlest one looks up, and she calls me Mommy. My heart breaks in two. I have no idea what to do. But something clicks. I'm even more scared than the day that I stepped on that plane, but I know that this is right. Today I have 14. I get a lot of that, like, do you really feel that they're your children? Do you really feel like it's a family? And I say, you come on over for dinner and tell me, because it is our family. people say to me all the time, like, wow, you are so lucky that you found what God wants you to do with your life. And I kind of look at those people and think, like, well, I didn't find it. It was just in the Bible. And so as someone who calls themselves a Christian, I mean, it's very apparent that you are to love the Lord with all your heart, and then you're to love your neighbor as yourself. And, like, myself doesn't want to be starving. And so I don't want other people in the world to be starving. Jesus does not ask that we care for the less fortunate. He demands it. When calling ourselves Christ followers, caring for orphans and the desolate and the widow are not an option. It's a requirement. I would like to invite you to come with me on this journey that is so far from over, and see what God will do next.
It's an amazing story. It's a story of someone who had bold faith, who created space where it was, it forced them to rely on God, created space for God to do something amazing. And what she thought she was doing, which most of us would say is bold, God had other plans. God had plans to make it bigger, beyond her imagination. We need leaders in the youth group and in the church that have bold imaginations, create space for God to work, to do more with our story. And we need leaders who will act boldly in faith, knowing that God also will step in and act and carry us and help us to live compelling stories in His name. Our story starts with Jesus, right? And if you walk with Jesus, I can promise you this, your story will be exciting. If you really are following what Jesus wants you to do, your story is going to be compelling to people. It's going to be bold, and God's going to act. And the way that story starts is in baptism. And in a minute, we're going to sing a song, and we're going to have leaders surrounding the auditorium. And if you want to be baptized and kind of start that story, then we encourage you to do that. But also, we recognize some of you may have prayers, concerns, celebrations, things that you're upset about, maybe that you want to just come and just lay at someone's feet, lay at Jesus' feet in prayer. And so we encourage you to do that. If there's any way that we can help you this morning, we encourage you to come as we stand and sing.